This is a Suno India production, and you're listening to Cyber Democracy. The rise of the gig economy and its digital mediation has led to various online platforms for workers. Some such platforms are targeted towards domestic workers. In India, domestic workers are mostly women from marginalized castes and classes, forming an invisible backbone to the care economy. With the advent of online platforms, what happens to these structural inequalities? Situating the lived realities of domestic workers, today's episode focuses on the challenges that they are facing while navigating digital platforms. Today we have with us Ambika Tandon and Parijatha GP. Ambika is a senior policy officer at the Center for Internet and Society, where she researches gender and technology. Parijatha works with Gamana Mahila Samuha and has worked with Stree Jagruti Samiti and the Domestic Workers' Rights Union in the past. Ambika and Parijatha have recently completed a research qualitative study on how domestic workers are using online platforms and apps. Great to have both of you on the show, Ambika and Parijatha. Welcome. Could you please tell us about your research? What was the project about and why do you think it was important to carry out?
So the project started last year in June 2019, and it's been hosted at the Feminist Internet Research Network run by the Association for Progressive Communications. So the idea was to look at any platforms or companies that are offering digital tools or solutions to recruit and place domestic workers across a range of tasks like cleaning, cooking, etc. And with the network, the idea was to take feminist principles and integrate them into our research as well. So we had designed the project to be in close collaboration and to be doing research as co-researchers with unions and domestic workers directly. So that was where DWRU, Domestic Workers' Rights Union, came in as well. Pari can talk a bit more about that. But when we started off, we were basically co-designing the questionnaires and doing interviews with workers, companies, government stakeholders, and unions across Delhi and Bangalore. So in total, we did about 60 interviews across the two cities.
Parijatha, do you want to add something to that based on the work that you brought on to this project?
Yeah, this is actually it's an online platform. I heard first time the Ambika told about that designing. No, so when she brought the questionnaire, that time actually we were literally was really it's happening in the cities. We don't know. When we are go through that questionnaires, then we know about the issues and how it's working, the agencies, online platform agencies in the cities, how their role and how they are attracting the labors. Then through that questionnaires only, we know about it. The even though DWR also, this is the first time we heard and we took up this research first time. We got great experience while doing the research and while doing the interviews from the workers, from the employers, and even though public also, they respond well for this study.
So these seem like pretty new developments around platforms and online tools, right? Could you just share a few examples of what kinds of apps and platforms there are currently for domestic workers? What types of features do they offer and how does one actually go about using these?
So we identified three different kinds of platforms. So the first one is what is known as an on-demand platform, and that's something that already exists. Has been identified in previous literature as well, both in and outside of India. So on-demand platforms are what are typically understood as gig work platforms, which is basically that there's a short task to be conducted and there will be a worker who will be assigned to work on each task algorithmically without any intervention from the platform itself. And they will directly be assigned. They will go and complete that task and be paid as per each task. So the nature of employment there is quite different because it's an hourly wage as opposed to how domestic work is historically been structured. So the other two are more in line with or continue to offer similar sorts of arrangements as to from what we understand of domestic work, which is regular, continuous, part-time or full-time work, sometimes even live-in relationships as well, where the domestic worker is going to be living inside the house of the employer. So the second type of platform is a marketplace platform, which is just a job board. So it will be listing the profiles of domestic workers and will be taking a fee from the employers to reveal these profiles or to give the information of domestic workers to the employer. But they don't do much else. They just list the information and they sometimes have things like ratings and feedback systems. But other than that, the platform doesn't really intervene in the employment relationship as such. And the third type of platform is what we identified to be unique to particular countries. I don't think this type of platform will exist in too many other countries, although we do know that there are some others in Indonesia and Pakistan. This is known as the Digital Placement Agency. And the model for this is exactly the same as an offline placement agency. So the employer will be expected to pay sum of money, say around 10,000 rupees. And they will be given a few options for domestic workers that suit their requirements. So the difference between a marketplace and digital placement agency is that the latter is very much involved in the employment relationship. So they will take a personal interest in placing each of the domestic, in fulfilling the demands of the employers and setting the wages as well as the tasks to be performed. This is quite similar to the way that offline placement agencies function as well.
Bangalore is a new entry for online fraud firm, I think, because only few have agencies only working online. Crew and Job, then Garelo Help, yeah, what she said, Hambika, say that other apps only working. But it's not completely not working because workers doesn't have the right information, because the workers, they are almost uneducated and they doesn't know how to use that online fraud firm. So their neighbors, their friends, somebody will register their name in their names and they will get the message. So some of women actually they know a little bit how to operate the mobile. So they get the message from the employer. That time only they can go for the job. Sometimes if they're not open, they couldn't operate the mobile. That time they can get the call from the employer, otherwise a company. Because the year in offline, actually they have the bridge between the employer and worker. But here, we couldn't see the bridge in between the employer and workers and agency, the online fraud firm. Because it's a fully it's a, operating by digital only. So this disturbance and the gap, distraction between the workers, employer and company. This is also one major issue for the worker. In worker perspective, if you go to worker perspective, because the employer can reject one worker, then they can get the other worker. But worker, actually, if they are fully depending on that job, fully depending on that company, it's very difficult to get another job. Also, they want to wait for the another job. When they will book the work, when they will register their work to other employer, till they have to wait, they should wait for that the message. This is a situation.
So from what I understand so far, this has already introduced a lot of complexities in a scenario where domestic workers are already occupying a pretty vulnerable marginalized space. And the introduction of these various platforms is now seeming to create a lot of the complexities that you're talking about.
Are there some other ways in which this is particularly affecting their lives, their livelihoods, in terms of their ability to earn, their negotiations with their employers, their relationships with their employers, and things like social security? So basically what I'm trying to ask is whether there's some kind of a difference between the workers who are finding jobs with the help of these apps and those who are finding jobs without the help of these apps through other kinds of offline agencies that you were mentioning about.
To start with, I think the basic issue is that there's a lot of impersonalization when things are going digital, right? So we found that in some cases, that can be a good thing as well, because workers are able to join the domestic worker workforce when they don't previously have contacts that would be able to place them. So typically, you would at least need to be part of a kinship network of domestic workers, or live in an area where there are a lot of domestic workers, or you go through a placement agency, which can be quite exploitative and will actually ask for money to place you in a job, which is not the case with online, with any of the online platforms that we've identified. So in that sense, it can be easier for workers to enter this space. But what it does also simultaneously is that they become very isolated. So they are not necessarily aware of any other workers, either on or off platforms. They may not even be aware of other kinds of platforms or other options that they have to find work. So they break away from these kinds of kinship networks, or not say break away, but are not able to find their way into any sort of collectives. So, which is also why we thought that might also be a reason why unions are not necessarily connected to workers on online platforms yet. The other reason, of course, being that workers may not necessarily know that what they or identify something as an online platform. They just know that there's a person who's going to be placing them, etc. So, but going back to the point of impersonalization, the other issue that comes in there for workers is that they often have to carry the indirect costs of that are outsourced to them by platforms. We found a lot of models in Pakistan, actually, where platforms are happy to support travel. And they found that this is actually a critical point for workers, for women workers, to continue working with them as well, because mobility, physical mobility, can be a problem for women workers. So if the onus is entirely on them to travel to different parts of the city and find their employers, and then this can be variable as well, as we know that some platforms, like on-demand platforms, can have a new place of work every day, or within a span of a few hours, then that can be really difficult, in particular for women workers.
So that's a really interesting insight on the absence of unions that are associated with online platforms for domestic workers. Can you share some experiences and examples from the field that you may have come across during your research for how exactly this impacts workers? Any kinds of stories or that you may have heard people actually going through in this kind of a scenario?
See, the online platform is a newly entered to the city and the Bangalore, and even though for workers also it's a new thing, even union also having challenge, because unions and domestic workers organization, actually they are working for their rights, workers' rights, but the online platforms, actually they're more invisible workers, labor force also, because the workers, they are invisible in the normally in this sector, unorganized sector, but online platform, they are working in digitally, they're not visible, their work and their identity recognition also. Just they're making the documentation in their companies. That is also digital. We couldn't track their all information. Just companies knew the workers' information. But unions, actually, for workers, we are fighting for their rights. If get any cases, if get any incident happen in workplace, we are fighting and we are negotiating with the employer, and we are doing some advocacy programs. We are asking and demanding the governance departments, labor department, other departments. But here, the online platforms actually, they're not helping for the workers. This is totally the business oriented and plus they want only workers to them have to make them have to bonded labor, because this is a tricky things. These workers are not getting correct information from the agency, then employers also. They are treating them piece worker, hourly and 2 hours, 3 hours. Otherwise, sometimes they are recruiting leave-in workers full time and part time. So full time workers, maybe they have the information, little bit information we can address, because the parents, we know. But here, the online platform, if they register their names, they will send many places. I can give example in one address, actually Book by Nanny. There's agency. This is a offline agency. We can find easily. At least a little bit information we can get from this agency. But online platform, we couldn't get the information. The workers, where they are going, really they are sending for work. Really they are sending for the work. Otherwise, they are trafficking. Otherwise, they are sending for other illegal social activities. We doesn't know anything. For public and unions also, even though the government also doesn't have that data about this. The Book My Nanny, actually I can give little information about this agency. It's a fully offline agency, but when we were doing the interview, that time the agency totally, actually in outside we couldn't find that agency. Really is in the that building is totally dark, and they put it one board, health service board. But is when we met them, they said this is the agency. But when we are going to inside the company, that time only we aware about it. This is a offline agency. They are sending the workers to live in domestic work. They are actually giving the awareness from many villages and doing some campaigns for the workers. These all women actually single and widow, more vulnerable and marginalized women. They take them from the villages and they will send some houses. But these women actually fully uneducated and illiterate, they doesn't know where we are going to work and how much I will get and how long I have to be work there and what is the nature of work. They doesn't know. Just they want piece of bread and they want to stay somewhere. This is the women's and women workers situation, vulnerability. So they are encashing the agencies their workers' condition, and they are getting some commission from the employer. And even though they have cut up their salaries also, if they are getting 14,000, 12,000 salaries for leaving domestic workers, they will cut up the 6,000 or 5,000 from the worker side also. Within 2 months, within 3 months, they are changing the workplaces, the agency. Because if the worker will work continuously 6 months, they may be negotiate with the employer. They can understand the employer condition, and they will recruit from the directly the employer. That's what the agency will break the bridge between the employee and employer relationship. Again, they will ship them to another houses. But here offline, we have the employee and employer relationship, have the some negotiable, collective negotiable, collective bargaining things is here. But in online, we can't find it. Because the online platform fully, they fixed and they made some strategies, they made some structure, and they formed some all formalities in the company.
You've brought out a lot of angles through which the gendered identities of domestic workers are impacting their ability and methods of working in these kinds of online spaces. And because we know that most domestic workers are also women, these jobs mostly are done by women. And do you think that this particular aspect is in some way highlighted or, heightened when it comes to the way jobs are segregated in the online sphere as well? Is there some sort of a continuity that we're seeing there, or do we think that the online platforms can potentially actually be a way to break those kinds of gendered jobs that we see in offline spaces?
Right. So in terms of occupational segregation, or looking at the way the tasks are distributed across types of workers, there is absolutely a continuity insofar as the sort of work that we see women workers and men workers doing. So if there's a cleaning job that's likely to be done, or a cooking job, baby care, those are the sorts of jobs that we see an overrepresentation of women workers of, and particularly with care work, elderly care and baby care, we, I think, would see primarily women in those kinds of jobs. And apart from that, the other striking thing about the platform economy is that the on-demand sector actually has higher wages, which is something that we spoke about earlier as well, that there are higher wages than regular continuous employment in the on-demand sector. But what we are seeing also is that men are the ones who are primarily performing these kinds of jobs, or are being hired. So when we spoke to companies about why this is the case, they found a number of reasons. Right? So one company told us that women are not applying for these jobs. So we only have men, they only apply for beautician jobs. Then one company told us that we have to send workers into different houses, and we can't guarantee the safety of women workers because it's a lot of flux in the job. So we don't hire women. So but what we found also is that these are the jobs that are being marketed as professional cleaners, right? So you have these task disaggregation in terms of bathroom cleaning, kitchen cleaning. These are professionals who will come in with implements and vacuum cleaners and chemicals, and they'll use all of these to clean up your house in the way that your regular domestic help won't be able to. So that is also something that we found to be a kind of gendered component, which is that men are the ones who should be doing these kinds of more complex tasks, whereas women workers are more likely to be placed in regular continuous employment. But in terms of the disruption, we did find a few. I think there was one company that was Parijata mentioned, Crew on Jobs, that was placing women workers in these tasks as well. And there we do find that women are able to earn more than they were previously.
So do you think this is more related to the way these platforms implement their policies and implement their design, or is there something inherent about these platforms that make this a more gendered kind of a job online?
So I think it's a mix of both, because of the fact that they tend to hire men. We don't see more women applying for these jobs. That's our understanding from what the company has told us. But I'm not exactly sure of how many women are applying for these jobs in the first place. But also the fact that women don't have as much digital access or literacy, and the fact that their physical mobility is in fact constrained by their partners and by their families, they don't end up applying for these jobs. That may be a factor we are assuming as well. Digital access, definitely. You have to have smartphones, you have to have an app to be able to use these, to be a worker in an on-demand platform. But that's not the case with the other two. There you can just register and you receive a call on a basic phone. That's going to work perfectly fine. So we do find more women workers that are working through the other platforms that don't require you to have a smartphone and an app that you have to continuously be working through.
Those are all actually really interesting insights to bring out. So now the situation already seems quite troubling. And we are also now dead in the middle of a pandemic situation. And we're constantly hearing news reports about, you know, how domestic workers are not getting paid on time. They're not even able to go and meet their employers to demand payments. Has the COVID-19 situation in some way impacted everything that you've been speaking about so far, based on what you've been researching? And could you maybe tell us a little bit about how exactly the pandemic is impacting the situation for domestic workers?
Actually, we have in the Karnataka, actually, they are facing the many issues for domestic workers. Mainly in normal situation, domestic workers, they doesn't have the recognition, identity, no database, and they are treating them criminalization, like slaves. First of all, government also not recognizing them as a worker. So in this time, actually, the regulation of workplace also not considered by the government and as by the society, like employer, RWO, Residential Welfare Association also. Because in meantime, because of COVID-19, the workers' situation and their livelihood really more vulnerable. And these women workers, especially they are women, and women workers, they are handling their life and they are handling families, they are paying the rent, they are feeding the children, then they are paying their children's education, everything they are handling, but the decision making is not happening by the women workers. In meantime, because of COVID, the workers suddenly they got shock, because tomorrow onwards, what can I feed to my baby? How can I will pay for the rent? How can I will buy the vegetables, buy the some ration for the family or children? This is the situation.
In terms of other kinds of concerns that are coming up during COVID, we know that, you know, not all of these are entirely new concerns. Some of them have been quite long-standing in the lives of domestic workers. And surveillance, in fact, is one such area that has now gained a lot of attention during COVID, but has also been happening in other forms before the pandemic. Do you think this applies even to this scenario of the platform work for domestic workers? Have you come across this in your research? And do you want to maybe talk to us a little bit about that if you have?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. What you said is exactly on point in terms of these different forms of surveillance already being in place before the pandemic, right? So there were things like you have to send before and after pictures of jobs that you have done. And this is specifically for on-demand platforms. The others just have rating systems and those kinds of things, but not necessarily surveillance of the kind that is being seen in on-demand platforms. So you have to send these kinds of photos. There can be facial recognition if on some companies they are deploying facial recognition tools to see if workers have gone to the place, the exact address that they said they were going to. So there could be the employer's app could have a tool to just verify that this is the particular worker that they were assigned. We also found an instance of a company which was actually recording their employees' phone calls to do a kind of performance check. But they weren't actually telling their employees that their calls are being recorded. This is an on-demand platform based in Delhi. There are others that also, of course, there's location tracking across each of these as well. So there are already a lot of intimate forms of data that are being captured. And we also found that one or two companies offered a specific system for women workers where if they were offered a job and they accepted it, then their husband's phone would also get a notification about the fact that they are going to a particular location. And that seemed to be from the company's end. They've previously given justifications as to the fact that they found the families to be more comfortable if they were already aware of the location of these workers. So we find that there's these sort of differences in how women's labor is valued and structured in the family that is being continued in the platform economy as well. So with COVID, we find that these are again, there are new forms of surveillance that are coming up, and these are more intrusive into the bodies of workers as well. So you have things like temperature checks. You have things like Arogya Setu being mandated, workers' information about their a temperature, for example, being shared with each employer. And this is a one-way street, right? So it doesn't happen necessarily for employers. In fact, we haven't seen this happen anywhere for employers where there are any sort of safety checks happening for them. But workers are being asked to give up more and more information as the gig economy becomes more mature.
These are all incredibly troubling developments that we've been discussing today. I was just wondering if there's any kind of a ray of hope that we have going forward. So would you like to maybe mention some recommendations that came out of your study for how we can at least in some way improve this scenario and give back some agency and rights to the domestic workers?
So with the recent amendment to the Code for Social Security, there's a mention of there's an entire chapter on platform workers where the government is recommending that they where the parliament has recommended that the executive can actually frame policies around offering social security for gig workers with some 1-2% of the platform's revenue being offered as contribution as well. There are specific challenges when it comes to domestic work because we don't know if domestic workers fall within the category of platform workers at all, whether they'll be seen to be as platform workers because they are invisible even within this sector. The government won't really recognize industries outside of transportation, logistics, food delivery to actually come within the ambit of platform work. So that's one challenge. The other is that when it comes to the other kinds of platforms, apart from on-demand, so digital placement agencies and marketplaces, they intervene to different extents in the employer-employment relationship. And so what we need is different regulation than what we would have for an on-demand platform. On-demand platforms need to be regulated differently than the other two types because they control a lot more of aspects of the employment relationship. With the others, there's a different kind of regulation that's required. So that's actually been thought about for placement agencies as well, which is to have a regulation for agencies that are recruiting and placing domestic workers. So platforms should come within the scope of that as well. Such bills have been tabled, but not been passed previously at state and central levels. And there's been conversations, say, in states like Delhi, where the government has been planning on regulating placement agencies because of their exploitative nature. And we thought that platforms should very squarely fall within the scope of that as well. So there have to be fair recruitment practices, for example, not taking deposits or any sort of other remuneration from workers directly, giving them information about what exactly is the sort of work that they will be doing. And those sorts of practices need to be adopted by placement agencies, both online and offline. The other thing that we found that some platforms are already doing is that they're connecting domestic workers to social security schemes that may be offered by the government. This, however, can be tricky because, as we've seen during COVID as well, migrant workers are being left out of these the sort of ambit of these schemes often. And domestic workers tend to be migrant workers. They tend to be migrants. They tend to be women from Dalit Adivasi communities. So this can actually be exclusionary for these sorts of workers because they're not able to get access to these schemes. So that's the other recommendation that we had, that for on-demand agencies and platforms in specific, they need to be taking on the onus of providing social security nets for domestic workers.
One thing actually, so recommendation and challenge is in same floor, because online platform actually they doesn't they are not coming under the shops and establishment act. Also the placement agency, the manpower security guards, these kind of agencies, actually they have come under the establishment act, shops and establishment act. Here the labor laws actually they are existing, but this is a informal sector. Domestic workers they are coming under the informal sector, especially they are invisible, vulnerable, everything we know. But the labor laws actually nowadays, after the central government, actually they are going to make the labor laws simplified, and they're making the labor laws labor code. Also the labor code is against to workers' welfare, especially these hot social security act and ESI and gratuity, maternity, these all, payment of wages act, these all laws actually they are favor of friendly for the workers, favor for the welfare of the workers. But here online fraud firms especially, they have the mindset like they want to earn money, that's all only. The workforce is their marketing, supply and demanding, their strategy like supplying and demanding, that's one only. They want to just like things only, where the demands is coming, they are sending the workforce. But they doesn't have the any labor laws and they're not following, they're not registered these hat under this hat, and they're not providing any welfare for the workers. Actually, in Korean job, that's an online fraud firm. The some workers, we met some workers, they said actually they faced the sexual abuse and sexual violence in the workplace. So after facing that the issues, they reported to, actually they didn't report to the agency, the company. While we are doing, she reported to me. Then we are asking that company representative who are there with us. They said actually they will going to make the employer blacklist, but they not taking any action against the sexual violence or abuse something. So I think the recommendation need to be make. They need to make some a policy like the Sexual Harassment Prevention Provision Act also, they need to make that. But in other workplace, actually we are, if they get like this any issues in the workplace, physically we'll go and do some, we'll set up some committees also, LCC and ICC, local compliance committee or internal compliance committee by the RWA also, Residential Welfare Association. Then the women can get at least their right, like dignity. Sometimes the allegation of theft cases also coming. That time we'll meet the RWA, otherwise employer and employee. Then we'll address the issues where it's happening. But here in online fraud firm, actually totally the agency has the fully control. If she is not satisfied worker, they have the choice to reject. The if employer is not happy with the worker, they can reject. So the collective negotiate her collective bargaining, nothing is not working here. The abusers and sexual harassment also, the issues also not visible to the world, and we can't make it report, and we can't inform to police or some departments also. That's one point. Then another one, second one, actually, the migrate app also. See, that is also is one big issue. See, the employer has the control that app. If the worker not fully not getting salary, if the employer not paying salary, if they're not log in the app, if they're not accept their message, worker message, or worker the security does not allow to inside the apartment. So here in offline, actually union, some organization, we can ask, we can question them by physically, but here we doesn't have any database and proofs, nothing. This is the issue. So the committees also, actually if they set up the committees, they took up the issues and they will resolve the issues. But here in online fraud firm, they doesn't have any formalities, and they are not following any code of practices, nothing. That's the main problem.
In today's episode, we have explored how digital platforms are adversely affecting the ability of domestic workers to find work, to unionize and negotiate with employers, and to ensure social protection and a life of dignity. We've seen how COVID-19 has impacted the scenario and looked at recommendations for enacting change. To know more about this research, please follow the links on the podcast page. Thank you for listening to this episode of Cyber Democracy. You can listen and subscribe to this show on our website, sunoindia.in, or any podcast app of your choice.